Hello and welcome to No Substitutions Please, a show about food and the things people do to it. I'm Noah, Music of the Spheres McKinnon.
And I'm Louisa, On a Roll Heron.
Louisa, what food are we talking about this week?
This week we're talking about the meatball sub.
Which we've already been, we've already made a problem of, because it's not necessarily a meatball sub. It might also be a meatball hero.
It might be a
grinder. It might be a hoagie.
Mm-hmm. All these things. These things and more.
That's right.
And we have already discussed meatballs on our podcast, which might make you think we're out of ideas, but no. Every idea branches into a million other ideas out into infinity.
Besides which, as we all know, This is like the carcinization of food, you know, or carcinization. Sorry. Let me redo this.
Uh-huh.
You know where I'm going with this, right?
Yes, I do.
This is like how everything converges towards being a crab. So mm-hmm. much the same way, all foods end up becoming sandwiches at some point.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they all end up becoming just little wads, little balls of food, which is also true.
I feel like the wad is the starting point, and it goes out from there. Mm. I feel like it's a Watto-centric model of food.
It is a very convenient form of food delivery, isn't it?
Yes, that's what Galileo, when he was leaving his trial by the church, that's why he said, "A per si wade."
Please elaborate.
Why, thank you. He supposedly said, "Eppur si muove," which means, "and yet it moves."
Yes. More Music of the Spheres, huh?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
There we go.
That's a theme.
Really makes you think.
You could use this show to discuss literature.
Not enough literary characters spend a chapter chowing down on a meatball sub.
Are you sure about that? Or are we, is this really a question of what we consider to be literature?
Oh, good point. Guy Fieri is the greatest literary mind of our time. Thoughts?
I mean, he did have, what is it called, the Great American Restaurant? Is that what his...
That's true.
So, clearly, if you write a book about it, it'll be the Great American Novel. Regardless of its quality.
Oh my god. You're blowing my mind.
Yeah. And maybe there's a reason. You might be wondering, as you're sitting there listening to this, why we're doing all of this. And I think it's because, as far as definition goes, there's not all that much to talk about.
Yeah. I think, here's what I'm going to say the definition is, and then I want to know what, if you think this makes sense. I think it needs to be a long, skinny roll, you know, sub roll, Italian sandwich roll that has meatballs in a tomato sauce with provolone cheese and Parmesan cheese also on the sandwich. And anything else is optional. What do you think?
More or less the same. Around here, I think the sub roll is pretty standardized for the most part.
Yeah, it is here too, usually, yeah.
And I want to say, the provolone, I think, is quite common. I think a lot of times mozzarella is also used as the cheese.
Okay, interesting.
And one of the comments that we'll get into later does mention it. I think some places, well, maybe we should wait for that comment before we get into it, but there's a difference, I think, in cooking technique there for some places.
True.
That might explain the different cheese choices.
Yeah, that does make sense to me. And some people will add, you know, sautéed onions, peppers, mushrooms, things like that. I think those are all perfectly nice, but they're not core parts of a meatball sub.
Right, like it's supposed to be a pretty straightforward food. Mm-hmm. This isn't a thing where, like, you mention the name of the thing and then you have to spend the next, you know, 10 minutes explaining what ingredients go into it. This isn't like having to explain ossobuco to somebody or something like that. It's you know...
Yeah, you say, hey, would you like to come over for dinner on Friday? We're having meatball subs. The person you're talking to probably knows exactly what to expect.
Yeah. So if there's, that's pretty much it. Yeah, I think we're done here.
I think so.
Well, let's talk about cooking method. to you, how... So, obviously, you make the meatballs. You prep them in the sauce and everything. What happens once you've got your bread? Like, how is a meatball sub prepared?
The way I like the place that I get it from, the way they do it, they will put slices of provolone cheese into the sliced open roll, which is usually an Amoroso hoagie roll around here. They then toast that provolone onto the bread. So the bread gets warm, a little crunchy at the edges, the cheese melts. And then the sauce and meatballs are put inside and the cheese has laminated the bread so the bread doesn't get soggy. And I hate soggy bread, so I love that they do this.
Yeah, that's very smart. I think some places, because I think a lot of the time when you look at pictures.
Yes, I was going to say.
Okay, there we go. So this is where the visuals and the marketing and the food artistry can be quite misleading. In Spanish, we would say traicionero, traitorous, which I think is a
that's very good.
Frankly, should be a more proper term. Misleading is too weak. We should be harsher about false advertising.
I do like to say that recipes are treacherous sometimes.
Treacherous, yes. That would be the way to do it.
There we go.
Yeah, the food artistry, I think, because a lot of the time the cheese is just directly on top of the meatballs, which,
yeah,
as you point out, you're going to end up with wet bread, and no one wants that.
We talked about this with chicken parm as well. It's the same thing. For a picture, it's nice to see that melted cheese, because you see that in the picture, you're like, oh, I would like to go to that restaurant and have that thing. That looks great. But when you're actually making it, it's better to have the cheese keep the sauce from making whatever the other thing is soggy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, now that we know what a meatball sub is, let's be honest, we knew that ahead of time. Let's find out what some people on the internet think it is. Louisa, rarely have we had a leadoff that is more confused on this subject. Why don't you start us off?
They're a bit creative. They say, we add some harissa to the sauce and roasted green chilies before the cheese for a New Mex / Cali spicy flair. Ciabatta rolls work too if you hollow it out a bit. Now, I think they meant spicy flair, but knowing the cliches about California, Cali spicy flair does have kind of a ring to it.
Yeah. And, I mean, all I could think of was Kevin Spacey Flair as a display name, which...
No, thank you.
It was in LA Confidential, though, so...
It's true.
There's your linkage.
This person clearly seems to think that harissa is perhaps a Southwestern or Mexican seasoning, which it is not.
This person is very confused about a lot of things.
Yeah, that is a North African seasoning.
Yeah, harissa, Mexico, Morocco, you know, they start with an M, they end in an O, same shit.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of the segment on one of those late night TV shows in 2003 when 20 years since the U.S. invaded Iraq for no reason, and they were showing people, like, can you point me out where Iraq is on this map? And they always labeled, like, Australia, Iraq, and so people would just point at that because it was, you know, and it's just like,
yeah.
If somebody comes up to you on the street and shows you a map of the world and asks you questions, you're an idiot for taking any of that seriously.
Because if you're right and you see through all their tricks, they're just not going to put you on the air. You're not interesting. You're wasting your time.
Yeah. yeah.
Oh, boy.
So, harissa. Now, if you're not familiar with harissa, which some of you may not be, it's a red pepper condiment, right? That's the...
I believe so. It is. It's red in color. I think you're right. Yeah, peppers. It has a sourness to it I really like, a saltiness. So it is. It's a delicious paste. It would make a very interesting meatball sub, but in no way is that New Mex or Cali.
Or Italian, for that matter.
True.
It's, yeah, we have had access to two wildly different brands of harissa where I am. So they'll sell you the dry powder, and that's actually a third one. That's a completely different thing.
Yeah, that always confuses me. Yes, yeah. I have that as well.
Because that'll be next to, like, the Ras El Hanout and the Berber, Berberet, and so on. But then you've got the two consistencies that we've had. One is, like, a thick paste that goes very well if you're making, like, honey harissa wings or chicken.
Yeah, that's the kind I've used.
Right. There's another one where it might as well just be spicy tomato sauce.
Ah.
And that is very confusing to me. I understand that we're foodies. Obviously, we understand that the same thing can refer to a million different things. But harissa is regional enough that it's very weird to have two wildly different forms of it sitting next to each other on the shelf.
Yeah, yeah, that's very confusing.
Yeah, that's like if you sold, you know, like salsa roja, and right next to it you had salsa roja that was literally just marinara. Like, people would ask questions.
I always feel bad. I've talked about it before, but when people in other parts of the world, when a recipe calls for cornstarch, and they're like, "What does this mean? Cornmeal?" And it's like, "No, I know in your local store you might only see cornmeal, but cornstarch is actually a totally different thing, even though the name kind of implies that they're the same thing." God, it's very complicated.
So we should. This is one of my favorite things that I found out recently, right? I was wondering, so I live in Rochester. We used to be the Flower City, F-L-O-U-R. Now we're the Flower City, F-L-O-W-E-R. Mm-hmm. And the other day I was sitting kind of by myself and was like, somebody had misspelled it in an assignment that I was grading. And I wanted to say something. And then I was like, I wonder if they're from the same root. So I look it up. And they're the same word.
Oh, no!
They're both from the French fleur. The reference is ultimately to flour being the fine-grained ground starch that you could use for baking bread, being the flour of the meal, which meal was the coarse ground starch that isn't really fit for making a bread, or certainly not like a pastry or something like that.
That makes a lot of sense.
This also, for those of you, if you've ever heard somebody describe something as a mealy potato, which,
I don't mind it.
Yeah, no, stop. It's fine. But that's what it means. It means it's starchy. It's not waxy like a red potato would be. So it took me a while to realize that. But that was a really cool linguistic note there.
Yeah.
Just finding that out and being like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. The flower of it, the nicest part of it, the most beautiful part of it would, of course, be that.
I love that.
Anything else? Ciabatta rolls. Fine, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think most rolls are probably fine. It depends on your preference. But to me, ciabatta is so very chewy. And meatballs are soft, and they want to slip out of your bread roll. I feel like this is a bad choice for a meatball sub, honestly.
Yeah.
I feel like you take a bite, you kind of shake your sandwich a bit like a dog, because you're just trying to bite through that ciabatta. And while you're doing that, four meatballs have fallen onto your lap and then onto the floor from the other end.
Yeah, that might be the reason. So, full disclosure. I don't eat a lot of meatball subs. We'll get more into this later. But one of the reasons I don't is precisely that. I don't want a food that is actively fighting me while I'm trying to eat it. You know? I'm not going to eat... There's a reason I don't eat, you know, like live octopus or anything like that. I don't want anything trying to escape while I'm trying to chow down. Like, All right. Here's somebody else. This is a comment of a kind that we just love to have here on No Substitutions, Please. I would even argue it possibly gave us the title of the show. Says this person. And off the first sentence, you already know how the rest of the comment is going to go, but here we go. Made this per the recipe for Sunday Night Football. Everyone, write down what you think is going to happen next.
Yep.
Give you a few seconds there. Except... Stephen A. Smith voice, used half-hot Italian ground sausage and half-ground chuck. Butcher mixed it up, so it's not my fault. Took others' advice and used beef broth in place of water and added Italian seasoning. Big hit with the husband and 15-year-old son. Why are people so obsessed with telling you the age of their kids in these comments?
Yeah, I feel like it, by age 15, by that point, they're just like, yeah, give me more calories. Let me shovel this in. Yeah, of course they loved it.
Yeah. Well, I do love that this person begins with, and the first time I confusingly read it, as though they were saying that there was a recipe for a Sunday Night Football. that is apparently a meatball. I was like, interesting term. I didn't know that anywhere in this country they referred to it as that. But sure, why not?
Oh man, people must make meatloaves in the shape of footballs for football night, right? That suddenly has occurred to me.
I don't think meatloaf is much of a football food, is the thing.
That's true.
Yeah, like, meatloaf for football parties and stuff like that, you want stuff that you can kind of carry around or put like a little bit on a plate. A meatloaf, especially if you fill it with anything other than the meat and you know, maybe like onions and whatnot, it's not gonna be very portable as a food.
That's true. That is true. Okay.
I mean, I'm sure somebody has done it. I'm just also sure it's not very common.
It's probably not very good either.
Fair. Now, having said that, I do want to give this person credit because I do actually think, from personal experience, a half sausage, half beef meatball, great idea.
Yeah, because Italian sausage is usually pork, right? Mm-hmm. And I know this recipe called for just plain ground pork, so I think substituting Italian sausage instead, great idea.
Oh, interesting. So the recipe just called for pork. No beef.
No, sorry. It called for half pork and half beef, and they've switched the half that was pork for half sausage instead, which is
yeah,
smart.
I was going to say, meatballs are usually, you know, pork and beef, unless you...
Yeah.
You know exactly where I'm going with this, unless you live in a shitty little village that's been sliding,
sliding down
yeah.
the side of a mountain.
Then you kill pigs and make them into meatballs. Mean pigs.
I will also say, this has to be bafflingly... We've talked about making meatballs before. A lot of people will use breadcrumbs and buttermilk or stock or wine.
Don't you mean spoiled milk?
Exactly. Bad milk. To make a panade, which is this soft mixture which helps hold the meatball together. This recipe had you make one with breadcrumbs and water. So basically every highly rated comment under this recipe was like, hey, why don't you use this other liquid instead of water? Which this person also did.
And they don't justify that at all?
No.
Interesting.
Yeah. That was so strange.
I wonder if it has something to do with... So, I sometimes struggle with cooking pork because I can lose that albumin protein. If you're cooking it too fast, if it gets too hot too fast. And with me, with pork chops, like the other day that happened, I did okay on the first go around, and then I flipped it. And when I flipped them, like, immediately started to see some of the protein rise to the surface. I was like, oh, man. Like, I thawed them extensively. I sat them out so this wouldn't happen, and just turned it up just the tiniest bit too much. And... And I know that when I've made meatballs with milk in them, sometimes it seems to like encourage that protein loss.
Interesting.
Like I get some escapade there. I always assumed that it was poor mixing on my part, that it wasn't mixed tightly enough with the meat, but I wonder if that's why.
Yeah, I wonder that as well. Although they used beef broth in this one, so I mean, that may be a way around it.
Now, mind you, I am giving this site the benefit of the doubt when we know for a fact that this site gets stuff wrong all the time. So, who knows?
Yep.
Who is our next meatball villain?
Ah, here we go. Someone who's really innovating in the world of meatballs.
Oh, God.
My husband has been on a panini kick, and I was thinking it would be cool to try a meatball panini. I use these meatballs were a huge hit. Everyone loves the meatballs. I made the sauce as well. It was good, but I need to find the right tomatoes. Author, we are not worthy.
Swing.
Yeah. It really bothers me. This is from a celebrity chef. And whenever you read the comments under the recipe from a celebrity chef, people are so effusive with their praise. It's kind of ridiculous. It becomes this weird cult of personality. I'm sure it's a fine recipe, but it's not. You don't need to say these things about it, you know?
You know, you wanna know how we got to the place that we are as a society? This shit right here, okay?
Yeah.
Just...
Also, I like this comment because it sounds like the worst possible idea. If you don't know what a panini is, I'm sure you do, but if you don't, it is a sandwich that is griddled under a weight, so it will be very flat. Making a meatball panini sounds like the stupidest thing in the entire world.
Yeah, just make a picadillo sandwich. It's the same result. And that time you meant to do it.
Yeah. I really wonder what they intend, because I'm imagining one of those really large meatballs between two pieces of bread, and then you put that pan or that griddle on top to slam it down.
Yeah, and the meatball is going, more weight. And by the way, I can verify now, having done it recently as a part of a fridge clear out, you can make picadillo out of two different meats, and it's pretty good. I made it with ground turkey and ground beef that were both kind of getting on in freezer time. They were a little bit freezer burned.
Oh boy.
So I threw them in. Well, that's the thing with picadillo. It heals that freezer burn very well because there's so much sauce around it and everything. And you put that over rice, it'll be like, it won't be as good as, you know, if you like ground up some beef fresh and put it in there, but it won't be bad. It's certainly edible. But yeah. Also, by the way, I wanted to point out, because it changes the meaning for once. You said everyone loved the meatballs, but what it says in this comment is, everyone love the meatballs, as though it's a command.
Yeah, it's a prayer being sent out to the universe.
Yeah, because the panini was an absolute disaster, but we're like, no, everyone loved the meatballs, it's fine. Well, speaking of innovators, we have somebody else who got creative with a meatball recipe, and oh boy, says this person. These are the best. I'm throwing away all of my other recipes. I love the great basic sauce recipe too, but added my usual preferences. 2 tablespoons red wine, 1/2 teaspoon of sugar, 1/8 teaspoon freshly grated nutmeg, 1/8 teaspoon ground clove, and a pinch of cayenne. All in all, this is probably your best recipe.
What are these flavors? This is a mulled wine meatball. That is what I think it would taste like.
You made a cocktail meatball. Good job, you.
Now, nutmeg gets used in a lot of savory dishes. I know Noah likes to use it that way. I personally do not. I cannot get past the idea that nutmeg is a sweet flavor.
Yeah. The only time I use it in savory dishes is I will use it in cream sauces. Having said that, I don't use it freshly grated. That has way too strong a nutmeg flavor.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it'll completely destroy the, to me, it completely destroys the flavor of the sauce. But a little bit of the ground stuff, just like a pinch of it, in an Alfredo or in a mac and cheese sauce, there's something about the astringency of it. You don't taste a lot of the nutmeg, but it cuts down a little bit on the richness of it. And so that's nice. Having said that, who the fuck puts ground cloves in a meatball?
I mean, we could probably find some type of food tradition that does, but again, to me, a very sweet associated spice. And I feel like both clove and nutmeg would be very overpowering. This person only added a tiny bit, but I feel like you would taste that so much in the dish.
Especially because clove is very aromatic. So it's going to vaporize into the sauce while you're cooking it too.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, no thank you.
I think, I guess the red wine I can see, depending on the red wine, not really, but like, the sugar is like, not completely indefensible, is what I would say. Like, sometimes you do see sugar added to meat dishes to, like, help it brown and stuff like that.
That's true.
But, yeah, the nutmeg and the clove, I think, are... ugh, just could not be more contraindicated. And also, as somebody who has recently become something of a freshly grated nutmeg pervert on cocktails, it's... yeah, if you're putting it directly into, like, that's a really strong flavor. It works very well with drinks because it tends to help wipe out some of the stronger flavors and make it easier to sip or to drink something that has very strong liquor flavors in there. in a meatball, that's the opposite of what you want, though.
Yeah. And the fact that they, I assume when they say, I love the great basic sauce recipe, but added these things, I assume they are still making a garlicky marinara style sauce for this dish. And I don't know. All that seems kind of weird to me.
Yeah. There's something that's just not quite right here.
Yeah. But we have some other interesting comments to read. Here's someone who wants to define for you what this type of sandwich should be. And they don't like that this recipe made some changes.
Oh boy.
Who puts basil leaves on a meatball hero? Why is this site not using meatball hero as they do in New York? A note on cheese. The last step of a meatball parmigiana hero is not to just melt, but cook the mozzarella so it caramelizes. I would say more than brown in spots. I would say the cheese should not be white when done. Just as toasted white bread should not be white. So I would skip the toasting in the beginning and just cook longer at the end. I mean, I don't disagree with their results, I guess. But I do think that's too much. The recipe, like they complained about, the recipe says to make sure the cheese gets brown in spots. That's fine for me. I don't need the cheese to be brown all over because then it starts to get dry and I don't want that.
Yeah, agreed. I think you lose a lot of the kind of, like, frankly, what makes the reason that you would use a mozzarella or a provolone
is
precisely because if it gets a little hint of the caramelization, that's really nice. But if it browns all over, then it loses elasticity.
Yeah.
You're going to end up with, you're putting your meatballs in a cheese cage for no reason.
You want that creamy, melty cheese when you bite into it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and also that removes, especially in the case of mozzarella, it removes some of the, like, the specific sweetness that mozzarella has when it's not cooked. It's a very clean base flavor. It sets off very well against rich meat. If you toast it, this is something I've had to learn the hard way. Like, I've had to experiment with how far are we going to take this pizza or this queso fundido or whatever. If you take it too far, you lose an essential quality of that cheese.
Yes.
It's, you got to be really careful how far you're taking things with it.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Also, I feel like they're calling the recipe kind of hoity-toity at the beginning. Who puts basil leaves on a meatball hero? Restaurants don't do that because basil's expensive, and you don't have to do it, obviously. But I think that would be a really nice addition. I would really love some basil leaves on a meatball hero. That would be wonderful.
And are they putting it on at the end as almost like a garnish kind of thing? Or
like you would put lettuce on another sandwich? They're using basil leaves. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't hate that. That's fine to me. I would. Also, Does this person think that there's only one way to refer to a sandwich containing meatballs, sauce, and cheese in New York?
It seems like they're saying that, but like most people who insist there's only one way to do something because they know a friend from that place who does it this way, I don't think they're right.
Yeah, of course they're not right. None of these people is ever right. You know that on No Substitutions, Please, one of the most important things for us is the emotional impact of food. The things that it does to our psyche, to the people around us, when we can cook for them and give them good food to taste. And, well, this person I think is a cautionary tale for all of us. Says, if you can remember not to touch the pan handle after it's come out of the broiler and is sitting on the stovetop, you're a better person than I am. Same if you can put rolls under the broiler for an entire minute without nearly burning down your house. If I ever make this again, and I might, if I can get over the trauma because it was a hit with the family members who got some before it was gone, I will use a sheet pan for the meatballs and the toaster oven for the rolls. A harrowing tale of culinary injury.
Very relatable. I have a silicone frying pan cover that I use specifically because I will do exactly this. I will pull a frying pan out of the oven, I will take off my oven mitt, and then I will try to touch that handle without even thinking instantly. So I have to make sure I have this cover on there so I know what I'm doing.
I thought that this was going to be my problem. So I have very rarely burned myself while cooking. I have actually been, for somebody who is generally pretty clumsy, I have managed to generally avoid cutting myself. I think I've cut myself once while cooking. And I've burned myself, I think, twice. Once.
Okay.
And if we're counting the one where somebody else was holding the hot thing and it just happened to touch me, I'm not counting that. If we are counting that, then it's three times. But this is the kind of thing that I really worried about when we started using the broiler for stuff. Like with, again, queso fundido, things like that. Because we put it in a cast iron and put it under the in the oven. And I always worried because I had to take off the silicone handle cover for that.
Right.
But generally speaking, I find that it's a thing of like, it sucks because you do have to pay attention to it. But if you're willing to be like, no, I got to remember to have this towel with me, or I got to remember to, it generally is fine.
Yeah, it's more keeping it in mind as you're moving around the kitchen than anything else.
Yes.
I do like their note about putting rolls under the broiler for an entire minute. I know my oven runs hot, but still, a lot of times a recipe will say, you know, put these under the broiler for 30 seconds. And I'm like, what could happen in 30 seconds? And then, of course, it's completely torched in my oven.
And yeah, and next thing you know, the fire department is coming over and...
Yeah, you never know how quickly a broiler can get done. So I tend to put things in the oven and then count to five and then start to peak.
Yeah.
So
I am the same way. I tend to, even though I roughly know how quickly my broiler works, I especially happen to know that things put towards the back of the oven are going to broil a lot faster because that's where the heat starts to deploy than things towards the front. So even then, I try to be very, very careful. I think this is the rare case where in cooking it kind of helps to be like mildly afraid of fire because you're just like you're paying attention, you don't want to burn down the house, which nobody does. I'm not saying, you know, none of us are Crazy Harry from the Muppets, but but I think it helps to have a little bit of that base fear, like, oh no, things might go wrong.
Yes, I agree. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah. I like the, if I can get over the trauma. Now that is relatable to me. I will say that.
Yep. The first time I deep fried something, I think I had to get over the trauma to deep fry again, but it was worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did not. Frying was not usually a problem. For me, the trauma tends to be you put in a lot of work to make something.
Oh, yeah.
And then it just came out a mess or... it didn't taste like you wanted it to. That's usually the traumatic experience. That's usually what keeps me from making something for a while. Mm-hmm. Anything else we need to say about this person?
I don't think so. They just really eloquently said a lot of things I've thought while cooking.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let me ask you this question. Have you ever made a meatball sub?
I was trying to remember. I don't think I have, because when I've cooked meatballs for spaghetti and meatballs, I tend to make them quite small, and then I don't ever think of putting them on a roll. I just have them with pasta, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
How about yourself?
No, never made it. And if I'm honest, it's not even a sandwich that I usually order.
Ah.
If I'm ordering a sub, I tend to like a cold cut sub.
Mm, okay.
More than anything. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And if I order a hot one, it's usually going to be like a chicken parm or maybe... No, it's pretty much a chicken parm. That's about the only hot sub I ever order.
I was going to say, my favorite place to get sandwiches from is Capriati's. I mention them because they are a local Delaware shop that has actually gone nationwide. So you can find those in...
I saw one in Scottsdale a few weeks ago.
Yeah, incredible. I can't believe it. People in the Pacific Northwest talk about Capriati's now, and I'm just blown away.
You know why it is, right?
Why is that?
That must be where Delaware snowbirds spend time.
Well, I can tell you, some of the family members, some of the Capriati's, moved to Las Vegas and hit it big there with their sandwiches, and I think they expanded out from there as well.
Italians in Las Vegas. Name a better duo.
Right?
Yeah.
But their gimmick as a shop, I don't know if they do this nationwide, but they certainly do it here, and they make a big deal out of it, is in their stores, they roast turkey breasts and hams and make their own meatballs every single day. Mm-hmm. So when you're getting a sub with one of those things, that has been fresh cooked by them in store. They have delicious meatballs, a really zesty sauce. I love it. And they do the thing where they laminate the bread with provolone like I love. So I do tend to order meatball subs from them when I want a hot sandwich. They also cut the meatballs in half, which someone mentioned, which is very smart because it can really stop the meatballs from sliding out of your sandwich. Mm-hmm. If you simply cut them in half after they're cooked, no problem.
Yeah, I'm shocked that that is an innovation. I
yeah.
One of the reasons I don't order it is that I don't like a sandwich that's hard to eat.
Mm-hmm.
If you're gonna give me a food that is coming with, like, people seem to forget a lot of the time that a sandwich, like the story behind it, is a dude wanted to eat something while playing cards.
Yeah.
And then they give you these sandwiches that have all this shit on them, and it's like, no, I want to eat something while I work, or watch television.
Yeah.
Or cook something else, for the love of God. Like,
Or even just sit in your car. Sometimes on your lunch break, you get a sandwich, you have to eat it in your car, you don't want meatballs falling in your lap.
Yeah, exactly. Meatballs keep falling in my lap.
Go on.
Terrible song.
You don't have anything.
No.
It is a terrible song, we agree.
Yeah. Anyway, so like I said, I don't often order it, but there is one place, the place that I got something that was most meatball sub-like, I think I've got one from DiBella's, which is our sub shop par excellence around here, but there used to be a restaurant downtown called, it was called Orbs.
Do they have that Orbeez drink? Do you remember this drink which had the little floating spheres in it from the 90s?
No. Oh, boy. Honestly, the people running the restaurant might have been too young to remember that drink.
What did I say? Orbeez? That was the toy. Orbitz was the name of the drink.
No, they did not have that. At least not when I went.
Okay.
Now, I think I went like a couple weeks after it opened. It was very new when I went. And obviously, the conceit was that when you walked in, there were all the powerful politicians of the world just, you know, touching big glowing orbs and making deals about the future of the world. No, I'm kidding. Obviously, it was meatballs.
Pondering their orbs.
Yeah, pondering orbs. Just wizards left and right. And if you're wondering exactly to what point the immaturity reached, yes, there were lots of jokes about balls in your mouth. And yes, the takeout bags were named ball sacks. So there you go.
Boo!
Yeah, if you were waiting for that.
Can we not make disgusting jokes about food? Can that be the one area in which we don't make the disgusting jokes?
Well, that's the interesting thing, right? I don't really want to explore this topic in any real depth.
Mm-hmm.
Might say I don't want to go balls deep in it, but...
No!
We don't have to leave that in, by the way.
I think we do.
Fuck. This is why we should have been a family podcast, so I could just swear to ruin a take.
Mention some copyrighted Beyonce songs so we can't use it.
Anyway, their conceit was actually pretty good. They had four kinds of meatballs, a traditional Italian one. They had a pork. It was all pork, and I think it was Italian sausage, at least partly. With arrabbiata, there was one that had a mushroom sauce, and I don't remember what the meatball was made out of, but I think it was their vegetarian one. And then there was one that I want to say was poultry, but I don't remember the sauce. And then the question was, how do you want them? Like, what format do you want them in? So you could order them as sliders, and you could get different kinds. You could order them, I think, as pasta. And I remember that I specifically ordered the pork ones. So we got an appetizer sampler of all of them. I loved the arrabbiata ones. So I got them with polenta, and they were incredible. But I also got to have one of the traditional ones on a slider with, I'm pretty sure it was just mozzarella. And that was pretty good. It was the one time that I've been willing to do that, but I was willing to do that because I was sitting at a table and I had a fork and a knife. And so, you know, if anything went wrong, I had the way, I had the tools to fix it.
Yes.
Whereas, yeah, I would not have been a happy camper with a regular meatball sub. No, no way.
I was going to say, another reason I guess I'm thinking of them as the pretty perfect party food is because when I go to Capriati's, they'll have big signs saying that they'll cater your party for you. And what they mean is they will sell you a gigantic bucket of meatballs and sauce.
Hell yeah.
A whole giant pack of rolls, a giant pack of provolone slices, and a shaker of Parmesan cheese. And that is the catering for your party. And I love that idea. That is so great.
That sounds incredible. So it's like, hey, happy birthday. Yeah, go look in the meatball bucket.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, that's incredible. All right, is there anything else you want to talk about as to how do you like your meatballs?
I was going to say, there was mention of mozzarella, and I agree that can be nice. But to me, the meatball, if it's good, it is well seasoned, has a good taste. It's not particularly strong, I find. So, okay. It needs a zesty sauce with it. It needs kind of a sharp provolone, and it needs a sprinkle of strong Parmesan to really make it good, because your only other component is a kind of neutral bread. So to me, mozzarella's not strong enough to complement those flavors.
See, this is something we were talking about with an entirely different food and cheese earlier. That's actually kind of why I like it with that. I like having a cheese that is very neutral. With, to be fair, I'm imagining here a meatball that is going to be very strongly flavored with so because of that, I would say, yeah, give me a mozzarella because I'll still be able to taste all the beef. And actually, I do sometimes stuff my meatballs with mozzarella in the first place for precisely this effect.
Ooh, very nice.
But yeah, I think you're right. If the tomato sauce is going to be the more dominant flavor, then yeah, go with a provolone. And do not, for the love of God, bake it until it's hard.
Yeah, that's wild.
Fucking Charlie from It's Always Sunny ass baked cheese.
It's a good versatile sandwich, though. When I hear there's going to be meatball subs, I'm okay with it. Like, no matter what kind of slightly odd element there might be, I'm rolling with the punches, I think. I'm enjoying that sandwich.
Rolling with the punches? Jesus. What is that? Wow.
What? You know that expression.
I do know that expression. It's not usually a positive thing.
What? Yes, it is.
It's a positive thing in that you're showing the mental fortitude to deal with something that's not a good thing.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I like the idea of meatball subs so that if, say, the bread's a little soggy, I don't like that. But I'm okay with it in this context. You know what I'm saying?
I'm going to let this go. Pretend I made any of various Walter Matthau noises at this point. All right.
Fair enough.
Okay. Well, for the first time, we have a segment that is not a mailbag, but is something that was submitted through the No Substitutions Please Discord. Thank you very much to... Well, it was to you, Louisa.
Yeah, that's right. I brought this to our Discord as a news item. I like to keep people apprised of the latest food news.
And this could not possibly be more appropriate for this episode because this is an article from TechCrunch by Paul Sars. It's spelled it's spelled like multiple people who use saws. Sars, you know? Sars.
Oh, okay. Like a Sawyer, but not a Sawyer.
Yeah, without the Y. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it says, cultured meat firm resurrects woolly mammoth in lab-grown meatball. And I already have like three issues with this title. Number one.
Resurrects is a strong word
to be using. Thank you. I don't think a woolly mammoth is... This is like... No, I'm sorry. You do not get to say this. When I make a salad, I am not resurrecting a lettuce plant. Baking bread is not resurrecting wheat.
When I first heard about this story, I became so enamored, like cellar door being a beautiful set of words, I became so enamored of the phrase lab-grown meatball. I just love that very much. I keep thinking about it in my mind. Lab-grown meatball.
a more depressing phrase, I would argue, but you know. maybe that's just because I'm used to cellar door. But also, I have a question for you. Do you think it's a firm of cultured meat or it's a cultured firm of meat? And furthermore, if it's a firm of cultured meat, is it cultured in the sense of it's lab grown, or is it cultured in the sense that the meat is very sophisticated and can discuss the latest novels?
Oh, man. I love that. It's like medium rarely well done. It feels like a play on words about the,
yeah. the
cook meat.
Yeah. It's, whoever wrote this headline should be proud of themselves. This is mm-hmm. a lot of questions being raised by this headline. But, the article says, scientists, Vow, an Australian cultivated food company that creates meat in a laboratory setting from animal cells, says that it has used advanced molecular engineering to resurrect the woolly mammoth in meatball form. Not resurrecting, again, if they had found the meatball in the Holy Sepulchre on the third day, you would not have said that was the resurrection. What is wrong with you? By combining original mammoth DNA with fragments of an African elephant's DNA. So it's also not a mammoth.
Yeah.
Right?
You filled in the gaps with frog DNA, and now your dinosaurs are running amok. We know how this goes.
That was what it was? It was frog DNA?
Yeah, it was.
Wow. Okay, normal. Yeah, so it says James Ryle, Vow's chief science officer.
No.
Company should not be allowed to name. You should not be allowed to put the title held by Mr. Spock as a corporate title. Screw you. Said that the company first identified the mammoth myoglobin, a protein that is key to giving meat its color and taste, and then used publicly available data to identify the DNA sequence in mammoths. And then this is one of the best editor's notes that I've ever... Do you want to take... Actually, you love this so much. Do you want to take the honors for this?
I don't even have this pulled up. I would rather you take it.
Okay, sure. So Ryle says... We filled in any gaps in the DNA sequence of this mammoth myoglobin gene by using the genome of the African elephant, the mammoth's closest living relative. And if you happen to be somebody who studies elephants, if you are a pachydermist of any renown, you are currently yelling at your phone. Because then...
Please, pachydermatologist.
Pachydermatologist? You study only their skin? What are you doing?
Stop trying to science my joke!
That's Greek for fake elephant, doctor. Anyway, the African elephant, the mammoth's closest living relative, and then let's help out the elephant studiers in the audience. Editor's note, it's actually the Asian elephant that is the mammoth's closest living relative.
I like that they made one statement that was provably instantly wrong. And it just doesn't matter to them, I guess. I'm suspicious about this company. They sound very slick. They sound very slick to me, really, about science, and I feel like maybe they're more about the publicity of it. But whatever, I love this story, so it's fine.
You think that a company making lab-grown food at a time when there's basically no profit to be had in it, and it's a massive loss leader, and there's...
And it's called Vow, and they have a chief science officer. Mm-hmm.
You think they might be about the publicity and not the food?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Weird, yeah. Can't imagine why you would think that. But yeah, we figured that we inserted the mammoth myoglobin gene into our cells using a very low current and high voltage charge. You Frankensteined a mammoth meatball.
Yes, they should have made a hot dog.
Yeah, well, a hot elephant, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, are we meatballed out? We did meatball out.
Yes! Ba-na-na-na-na-na. Would you eat the mammoth meatball? Because I would.
Yeah, absolutely. Come on. Actually, wait, no, I immediately take that back. If it were just like, if you just gave me the thing and we're like, yeah, so mammoth DNA, we resequenced it and we pulled this together. Do you want to try this? If you just came up to me in a store and said that, yeah, probably I'd say yes. Everything I read in here makes me less likely to try it.
Yeah, it is quite suspicious. All right, that's fair. I will agree. My only note is, this seems to be somehow they made, I'm guessing, a sphere of just this DNA. And that's not a good meatball.
No.
You want other things in a good meatball. So I would try it, but I don't think I would like it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know these fuckers didn't make a panade.
Exactly. No, is that all that we have to say about meatballs?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, thank you for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed it, please tell your friends, and please rate and review us on your podcatcher.
If you'd like to follow the show, we're on Twitter and co-host at NoSubsPlease. We're on Mastodon at NoSubsPlease at Mastodon.online. If I did my job correctly, the individual handles for both of us are in the episode description. Also, we talked about it earlier, but if you'd like to talk to us more directly about food crimes, share pictures of what you're cooking, exchange recipes, or even just talk about whatever. Unbelievably, I was not the first person to turn it into baseball chat. still in complete shock about that one.
Me too.
Yeah. But if you would like to do that, we have a Discord now where you can talk about, as one of our listeners put it, food and the human condition. And if you'd like to do that, just reach out to one of us and we'll get you set up.
Until next time, we have been at No Substitutions, Please. And like the best cooks, we will leave you wanting more.